Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast, your weekly dose of talking about watching soccer on TV, online and apps. Coming up on episode 44, we discuss Fox's coverage plans for World Cup 2018. Also, whether NBC Sports Gold can bounce back after last weekend's major outage. Our verdicts about Facebook Live soccer coverage and lots of streaming news. Plus, we have a ton of letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined by Kartik Krishnaya. All right, Kartik, so let's jump right in. For any new listeners, this is a podcast really about covering the media that covers the sport. So oftentimes we talk about the games we've been watching, but also kind of hone in on a lot of the analysis and coverage that we're getting. So let's start off there, Kartik, and talk about... let's start off with the Champions League. That's probably the freshest in our minds. What are your thoughts about the job that Fox did this week?
Yeah, I was really encouraged by what Fox did in the studio this week. They replaced Rob Stone with Ian Joy, who was one of my personal favorites, and I thought that was really appropriate. And Ian Joy directed the conversation with the studio analysts in a very different direction than Rob Stone would, drilling deeper than giving these very basic questions and these very kind of soft questions. Jovan Karofsky replaced Alexi Lalas. This was a big move in terms of upgrading the quality of analysis in the studio, the actual emphasis on the games that were being played and the clubs playing those games and some of the key players and tactical side of the game. So that was a great upgrade. There was no MLS or U.S. men's national team talk other than when it came to Christian Pulisic, which is an obvious place when Borussia Dortmund was preparing to play Real Madrid. But other than that, there was no real emphasis on Major League Soccer and the U.S. men's national team. One of our great criticisms of the Fox pregame show for the UEFA Champions League is it's basically U.S. men's national team report or Major League Soccer report, more U.S. men's national team. And you'll bring Grant Wall on and Rob Stone will be talking about the national team. Alexi Lalas will be talking about the national team. They'll inevitably try and keep Eric Winalda out of the discussion because his views on U.S. soccer don't concur with the company line, if you will. So I thought this was very good. I hope Karofsky is kept in studio, and I hope that Ian Joy continues to be called in to host, or Kate Abdo, one of the two. We'll see how Fox plays this, and maybe Lalas will focus on Major League Soccer and the U.S. men's national team, other Fox properties, FA Cup, perhaps getting ready then for Russia 2018. Oh, and also Brad Friedel not being in the studio. Friedel's level of analysis isn't necessarily as in-depth. Now, I hate to keep having this comparison. We've had this comparison for 25 years, right? But Friedel versus Keller, because that was always the competition for the U.S. goalkeeper. I watch Casey Keller when he's on the Seattle Sounders broadcast and when he's on the ESPN FC program, and I think that he's much more willing to drill deep with his commentary necessarily than Friedel is. So at least at this point as commentators, Keller is a little bit ahead. Maybe Friedel, like happened in real life as the goalkeeper, will eventually win the number one job.
I completely agree, Kartik. It's one of those strange things because essentially for Fox, this is their B team. So you got Ian Joy, Jovan Karofsky, Eric Winalda, really stepping in for Rob Stone, Alexi Lalas, and Brad Friedel. And I wouldn't get our hopes up too soon, Kartik. Reason being is that I think that Rob Stone and Alexi Lalas especially were away in New York for their... basically at a press conference or kind of invitation only media event to talk about the World Cup. And we'll get more into that in a little bit. But that's my thinking is that Fox is just, this is just a temporary lineup. And then next match week, maybe
let me point this out. I forgot to point this out. Jovan Karofsky, even though he was a reserve player generally on these teams, has played and trained with some of the biggest clubs in Europe. Clubs that are in the Champions League, Manchester United, Borussia Dortmund, Sporting Lisbon, and others. So having that voice, and particularly an American voice that has trained and played at those sorts of clubs, is so important when you're covering the biggest European club competition. Mm-hmm. And I think Karofsky is a guy that if he's not going to be showcased here, maybe Turner Sports, when we saw him do the game with VN, right, with Phil Shane. So he's obviously a bit of a free agent. Which game was that? U.S. Honduras. Maybe Jovan Karofsky is a good shout for Turner Sports if he's not going to be showcased at Fox.
Yeah, it looks like he's still going to be at Fox, though. I think it's one of those things that in the kind of the totem pole, I mean, he's up there, but he's not as high as Alexi Lalas in Fox's minds, which is a shame, too, because, I mean, to me, his understanding of the game, even his co-commentary has been good, too, and we'll get into that a little bit with the Bundesliga. But it's interesting, too, I mean, because really, I mean, look at Ian Joy, Jovan Karofsky, and Eric Winalda. All three of them are Americans, and all three of them played in the Bundesliga. So it's perfect timing in terms of Bayern Munich being a big topic this week, and also having played in Europe. I mean, so for the having three Americans on the set to intelligent, thought-provoking, in terms of their analysis, and having them talking about the UEFA Champions League, I just thought that the way that the show pregame this week worked out was it flowed more naturally, instead of having Grant Wall coming in for like 10 minutes talking about something that had completely nothing to do with the UEFA Champions League.
Yeah, and I think Karofsky, it's just I don't want to obsess too much on one personality, but it's an important one to look at, because we have this obsession with the U.S. men's national team that a lot of other countries don't necessarily have with their national team versus club teams, right, versus guys' success at the club level. And Karofsky was a guy that we always thought about as our next big thing on the national team. He never really panned out, even though he has something like 60 caps. But he's a guy that's played at big clubs. Came through Manchester United with Giggs and Giggs, Scholes, the Neville brothers, that same Nicky Butt, that same era, and played in the Premier League for a while also with Palace and with Brum. So he's a guy that has different perspectives at the club level than a lot of even the U.S. the most successful U.S. men's national team players have, because they played much of their career in MLS, or if they were in Europe, they were at one club. So I think his experience as he develops as a co-commentator and as a studio analyst is so important, because his perspective, there are very few Americans who have played at the clubs he's played at. Mm-hmm. And that's something to remember.
Yeah, I think for me personally, as far as the pre-game, halftime, and post-match, this is some of Fox's best work in a long time in terms of UEFA Champions League. I'm not sure if it's coincidental or not, but last week we reported about Jonty Whitehead, who is the producer over at Fox Sports, that quit the company and has gone on to, well, I don't even know where he's gone now, but he's gone on. So I don't know if that's part of the equation too, and whether maybe now the actual production is better because of him not being there or not, who knows. But at the end of the day, I thought Fox did a great job, and hopefully these guys, hopefully they'll get some really key roles in the World Cup coverage too. And again, we'll get more into that a little bit later. Kartik,
Facebook Live,
yeah.
Also.
Well, Facebook Live, let's leave that one, because that's going to be our feature topic of the week.
So the Fox coverage of the Champions League you want to wait on, of Facebook Live coverage?
Yeah. So we'll cover that in our feature topic of the week. Now, in terms of some of the other games we've been watching, let's kind of go into Bayern Munich against Wolfsburg. That was the the game on Friday. I enjoyed this one, Kartik. I enjoyed it for two reasons. One, I enjoyed the match. It was competitive, which is rare to say when you're watching Bayern Munich in the Bundesliga. But the other thing I really enjoyed too was just the Eric Winalda doing the co-commentary, Keith Costigan as far as the commentator, the whole studio setup they had. I really think that Fox is doing a fantastic job with the Bundesliga coverage. There's a lot of issues about why the Bundesliga is probably not going to get as big, but they're doing a great job. I'm really, really excited about watching more and more Bundesliga.
Yeah, Costigan had two games this week that I saw. The Bayern-Wolfsburg game did a very good job with Eric Winalda. Then the Orlando City-Portland game with Alexi Lalas. Costigan, a former Portland Timbers player, and Lalas and Paul Tenorio, actually, was the sideline reporter. Was really happy to see that for that game. Fox was stretched because they had their other two games on Fox Network, so that was essentially they had to pull a third team out for that game. And Costigan had a very good week in both games, I think, calling them. And as I've said before, Lawless is very hit or miss. I thought he was on in the Portland-Orlando game. Then again, it may not be that difficult to analyze how good Valeri is and how bad Orlando was. I know Orlando fans, I know we're recording this after you beat New England 6-1. New England was down to 10 men after 6 or 7 minutes. Don't get too excited. The Portland game was a 3-0 shellacking out at out in Oregon, and Costigan was great in that game. He was really good in this one. And I think Wynalda, as a co-commentator, he describes things that other American analysts aren't, just like describes kind of mental aspects of the game during the game. And then obviously a lot of good tactical analysis from him. So I thought this was good. After the game, the ESPN FC...
Let me add in on Wynalda there too. I think he's really in his element right now, and we'll get maybe into the news section later about maybe one of the reasons why, but he's got such great confidence at this level right now. But the way he reads the game, it's so good. It's almost like you're getting it from the mind of a coach, and you're seeing things differently, and he's explaining it really well. And that makes a big difference too, because oftentimes you get players kind of adding their perspective, or former players, but he's seen it through the eyes of a coach, and he's seen different things, kind of watch out for this, watch out for that. And it's really elevating the coverage, and that's so rare to say when it comes to Fox Sports.
Yeah, I think it's getting better, really, Fox's Bundesliga coverage. I mean, this is year three. Year one, it was as if they didn't care at all. It was a throwaway. And year two, they made some progressive changes to improve the broadcast. But it seems like now they've got a real feel for the league. They understand the league. And if you are a Bundesliga fan, they're doing a much better job. The numbers have come up ever so slightly. We'll talk about that in the next segment three. But it's getting to a point where we're getting comfortable with Fox watching the Bundesliga, and we're not turning the games on thinking, oh gosh, it's going to be a disaster. There was the one game where Warren Barton was the co-commentator, the one Bayern game earlier in the season, which was terrible. But I guess NBC has its bad days too at Premier League coverage. So right. I'm getting more and more comfortable with Fox's coverage of the Bundesliga.
Yeah, me too. But I really enjoy it. And actually, let me just add one more thing, Kartik, before you talk about what ESPN FC had to say about the Bayern Wolfsburg game. And that is that on Sunday, I watched the I didn't watch all of it. I just watched maybe the first 20 minutes of it. I had a run, but it was the Hanover Cologne game, and Steve Cherundolo was the co-commentator. Former U.S. men's national team player. So that was great to kind of...
Hanover legend.
Yeah, so it was great to have him on the commentary. That's the first time I remember hearing him. So that was a nice bonus there. So
yeah, I'm thinking if you're covering the Bundesliga, that's the guy to get, right? If you're an American network, played in the Bundesliga for 15 years or so, is probably... Culturally, I'm just guessing, probably as German as he is American by now, because he had spent so much time playing in that league.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he was doing the co-commentary for the World feed. So so we might get to hear him do some more games in the future too. So what about ESPN FC Friday in terms of that Bayern Wolfsburg 2-2 tie? What did they have to say about that one?
Well, Burley right away said Ancelotti will be sacked by the summer. Everybody seemed shocked and incredulous about it, and Craig Burley went on to say they're not going to win the league if they play like this. Oh, they're only 2 points behind it, or 1 point behind it. It became four the next day, right? Because Borussia Dortmund crushed Borussia Mönchengladbach. But he said no, because the way they're going, they're going to continue to drop points in these games, and Dortmund will win the league. Everybody was kind of shocked. He doubled down again on Monday. So Dortmund wins 6-1 on Saturday. Burley on Monday said Ancelotti's gone. He's gone. When they started previewing PSG Bayern, he's gone before the summer. He's going to need to win this game, or he might be gone sooner. Well, as we record this, it appears like he is gone much sooner. Mm-hmm. It appears like Burley was correct. They, of course, got beat 3-0 by PSG, a match where he sat a bunch of his bigger name players. We'll get more into that during the Facebook Live segment. So that was interesting. Obviously, the Premier League the next day. this is a subject we've talked about on the show before, Chris, and I want to get your thoughts on it. For me, Arlo White's commentary is becoming more and more tedious as we go on, and he's always paired with someone really good, right? It's either Lasso or Lee Dixon, but he is constantly talking during the game. Right? Mm-hmm. To the point where there was one point in this game where he starts asking Lee Dixon a question, and Dixon's like, let's wait to watch this, how this plays out before I give a comment. I don't know if you were watching at that time, but no. He did. He's not – if you're going to talk constantly, there is – John Strong and Ian Dark are two commentators on other networks, right, in the U.S., and – they both talk a lot. They talk more than, let's say, John Champion does or Mark Tyler during a broadcast. But there seems to be a level of analysis or usefulness in some of the additional commentary Strong or Dark gives. I'm not finding that with White anymore. It's just becoming tedious, to be honest with you. Maybe it's familiarity breeding a certain degree of contempt because we see him once or twice every weekend. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, I think a little bit of it is a plateau, and we've talked about this in a previous episode. Going back, if you guys want to go back into the archives, about how NBC Sports has seemed to have hit a plateau with their coverage of the Premier League in general. Anyway, even before the whole NBC Sports gold debacle, but to me, it's time to change it up a bit. I mean, that's the thing that NBC Sports has done so well up until now is making all the right decisions. Again, except for NBC Sports Gold. But in this case, I think it's time to change things up a little bit. And I wonder if they're starting to think about, spreading the wealth a little bit and having maybe Arlo, instead of doing three games a weekend, having him do one, bring somebody else in to do kind of a commentary. That's the concern, though, is that they wouldn't really have anyone lined up. Before they make any changes, the way that they've been going, which has been very conservative, it may not be until next season. And by that point, I think there'll be more and more people that are kind of tired and sick of him. He's okay by himself. He's not the worst commentator ever.
No, I'm not saying that.
No,
I'm making the obvious comparison as the top commentator for a network, comparing him to John Strong and Ian Dark, who are the top commentators of the other two big networks.
Yeah. I guess the best word I could describe it as is stale. And stale, yeah. Sometimes, and not to say that it's a bad thing, it's just too predictable, and we know what we're going to get. And there's a lot of people that like him, there's a lot of people that don't. And you know what you're going to get with Arlo White, so for good or for bad. For me, Kartik, it's two of my four kids are in AYSO, so AYSO has started up, and so this past Saturday for me with the Premier League, I didn't get a chance to watch many games because of being at the fields for the games there. I did come back to try to watch Swansea against Watford on NBC Sports Gold. And I had no idea what was going on, so I came back in, joined it mid game, and then looked on social media, and so social media was blowing up. Again, we'll get more into that in our news segment, but the one thing, yeah. I did learn, though, too, which is a question that came up on the worldsoccertalk.com website, is if you go into NBC Sports Gold and you want to watch one of the games mid game. Can you go ahead and say, okay, start from the beginning or go live? And there's no choice. It takes you in right into live. So I was going in hoping I'd be able to go back to minute zero.
That's almost pointless in some ways, because I think part of the reason you get these on-demand services.
Yeah. Well, like with Sling TV, for example, if you go into a live broadcast, you can go ahead and start from the beginning or go live. And with NBC Sports Gold, you can't. And I found out the hard way because
I have to tell you, actually, even on DirecTV, if you turn on a Premier League game at 11:15 Eastern time, it'll give you the option to rewind to start this game from the beginning. Now, the only problem is on DirecTV, if you start it from the beginning, you can't fast forward through it.
Okay. Huh. But at least you have that option. At least you have that option, and you know what you're getting.
So I'm stunned they don't have that option.
Yeah, so NBC Sports Gold, I went in, and I was hoping to go back to the zero, and I went in at minute 52 with Swansea losing 1-0, and actually probably was a good thing because I heard that the first half was Swansea was horrible, and the second half was much better. So I watched the last, 38 minutes of the game, and it was pretty entertaining. Not the result I wanted, but it is what it is. Kartik, so what else did you watch this past weekend?
So the NBC Sports Gold fiasco took up a lot of my time on Saturday. We'll get to that in the next segment. The Manchester City Palace game was the 10 o'clock Eastern Time kickoff on NBCSN. That was kind of a ho-hum kick around. Switched to CNBC, Chelsea at Stoke, same thing.
Yeah.
I think the one thing we have to take away from this, though, is that everybody's talking about the Manchester teams and maybe Spurs form away from home, away from Wembley, although Wembley continues to be a big problem for them. But Chelsea is right there, going to the Britannia or whatever the stadium is called now, Bet365, and putting that kind of performance on. Then midweek, going to the new Vicente Calderon. I'm sorry, I don't know the name of the new stadium, but to the new stadium for Atleti and winning with that Batshuayi goal late. That they're still at a really high level. So watch that. We talked about Liverpool, Leicester. I watched Dortmund, Borussia Mönchengladbach for a little bit when I switched from the Liverpool Leicester game. You know, it's tough because there is so little. I get annoyed by the lack of quality defending in the Premier League and the bad giveaways, particularly when Liverpool and Leicester are just a poster child for this in the league, right? So right. This was possibly, even though there was a lot of scoring and it was exciting end-to-end stuff, as Arlo White building up the accolades for the league would say, you know, you can't take your eyes off of it. I think that was his line. At the same time, it was because both teams were giving the ball away and both back lines are terrible. So I switched to the Dortmund solution. Borussia Mönchengladbach game, and it's every Dortmund game this season has been 4 or 5 nil. Now they finally conceded in this game towards the end, but it's funny because last year Dortmund was the team in Europe that was probably playing just like these Premier League teams, giving up goals, losing games 4-3 under Thomas Tuchel, and under Peter Bosz this season, a former Ajax manager, they've come in and solidified their defense, and they're still scoring the same amount of goals, so then they're not interesting to watch, so I switch back to Liverpool and Leicester and see Mignolet make the penalty save and then the other maybe non-call.
We talked about this in last episode and kind of that there wasn't really a lot to talk about last week in terms of some really competitive, exciting matches, and I think I found the solution because I've had the same issue too, where there's just been too many one-sided games, and even if you're a Manchester City supporter, you mean it gets a little bit tiring after a while. It's like you mean Crystal Palace is so bad, but I think I found the solution, and that's the Championship, because I watched Sunday morning. I watched the Sheffield Derby, so the first Steel City Derby in 5 years. I watched Sheffield Wednesday against Sheffield United, and I was blown away. It was really entertaining, very competitive, back and forth, end-to-end action. A different type of football, too. You mean it's not your predictable kind of tiki-taka. There were some long balls. There were some, you mean, it was physical, really entertaining first half. And I think I might start trying to watch more of the Championship. I mean, I do try to when I get a chance, but oftentimes it's on at the same time as other games. And unfortunately, with ESPN3, and the same thing with Sling Orange, there's no way to actually record those games. So that's the challenge I have. But yeah, I was really excited by this one. And to me, this is one of the most exciting competitive matches, two-sided matches I've seen from this past week from watching football.
Right, and I ended up watching Cardiff and Leeds midweek, which was I was watching that at the same time as Champions League with multiple screens going, and that was an exciting game. Yeah. So the other thing I wanted to point out from the weekend was that NBC, we've criticized them a lot recently, but it seems like their Monday pregame show is always worth watching.
Yeah.
So it was West from Arsenal this week. Liam McHugh was hosting, no Rebecca Lowe, but they always bring in the co-commentators for the commentator and co-commentators for the Monday games, the Premier League commentators. This was Gareth Barry's record-breaking game. I'm a big fan of his, not just from his time at Man City, but even before that at Villa. And then you've got the Steve Bauer segment, where Liam McHugh brings Steve Bauer in from the BBC studios, and there's the BBC Sport affixed in behind him. So I guess that legitimizes it in a way, right? Mm-hmm. But he gives a lot of information information, inside information that you don't necessarily get during the weekend on NBC. So it almost serves in a way as a weekend wrap-up show because what's happened the last few weeks, and hopefully scheduling considerations will loosen for NBC, what's happened the last 2 weeks, I want to say, maybe 3 weeks, is that Goal Zone has been bumped. The Goal Zone after the games on Saturday has been bumped to NBCSports.com. And they haven't been able to show it live on SN or on NBC over the air. So it seems like you're missing that piece of weekend wrap-up or Saturday wrap-up that you would get normally. And then there's the match of the day. They do tape that, and I watch that, but that's highlight heavy, right? There's there's less analysis in it. So the Monday pregame show, and I think I mentioned this toward the end of last season as well, is becoming a real kind of valuable hidden gem in NBC's Premier League portfolio.
Yeah, I agree. I also enjoyed the pre-match conversation with Martin Tyler and Danny Higginbotham. That was good. The other thing I really enjoyed too, and I thought was really good coverage, was pre-game where they were able to show the picture of inside West Brom's dressing room, changing room, of the photo, the sign that they had that was set up. And it had, I think, five key points, which was kind of Tony Pulis's mantra as far as don't let the players in behind you. Start, you mean the first half, you mean hard, fast tempo, those types of things. I thought that was really enlightening.
But here's the thing again, the ESPN FC versus NBC contrast on Arsenal. I mean, I hate to keep bringing this up, but so you watch NBCSN after the game, and they're very genuinely complimentary. Hey, Arsenal, they got the business done. They won the game, Lacazette, etc. You turn to ESPN FC, and you'd think Arsenal would have lost. I mean, Burley and Hislop were talking about how West Brom were all over them early, and how there should have been a penalty, and who was it for West Brom should have just gone down? I can't remember. Jay Rodriguez, yeah, it should have been a penalty. And again, Arsenal isn't impressive, and they're not going to finish in the top four. So, again, it was six weeks ago or 8 weeks ago on this show, we had the whole conversation about the narrative from those two networks. For whatever reason, NBC's trying to give Arsenal a fair shot or build them up, and ESPN's pundits on that ESPN FC have just completely written them off and take any chance they can to take shots at them, even when they win.
Yeah, which is true. It's fair points because, I mean, based on the result of that game, it did not match up with the performance on the pitch. And it could have easily been West Brom, could have been 2-0 ahead at halftime.
Right. So, I didn't disagree with Burley or just interesting analysis. It's just, but they, it's almost like they have their talking points prepared when Arsenal plays.
Right. Which again, it depends which kind of pair of glasses are you watching this game with. You know, if it's rose tinted or not. But and I see ESPN FC's side of things definitely. But it's not just Arsenal though. You've seen it with other teams too. Where kind of Man United last season in terms of some of their performances were so poor, but they ended up getting the results. And the results didn't match up with the performances. Two more things, Kartik, real fast. Is I did watch Juve against Torino and the derby, the Turin derby. Really some classy goals there by Juventus on beIN Sports. Watch the Dortmund-Real Madrid game. The one thing I would say is if you want to watch the Champions League, UEFA Champions League, the best way to do it still is Multi-Match 90. Really great. I watched it Wednesday on Fox Soccer Plus through Fubo. And minute by minute, those goals go flying in, and you're just jumping from game to game to game. And to me, that was definitely the most exciting way to watch the Champions League, especially when you have so many good games going on at the same time. And of course, Kartik too. Unidos por los Nuestros.
Oh yeah, I watched that Wednesday, Tuesday and Wednesday. That was fantastic. Well done. Maybe too many voices crowded in the commentary booth, but they had to get everybody in. I don't want to start naming names because I'll forget someone ultimately. But I thought Kev Egan was tremendous. I thought Hercules Gomez was tremendous. I thought Seb Salazar. Everybody involved in it was Mark Rogandino did such a fantastic job, and. It was for a good cause. It was for Mexico, Puerto Rico, Florida, Texas, relief from natural disasters. I like seeing Liga MX in English. Yeah. I hope they show more games. Yeah. I mean, it was cool. I got to watch four games in two nights.
Well, that's the league. Yeah, and that's the thing for listeners who may not be familiar with it. So Unidos por los Nuestros, United Together, was a collaboration between all the major sports networks, well, most of the major sports networks in the United States, Univision, Fox Sports, ESPN, beIN Sports, Azteca America, Fusion, and there might be one or two I'm forgetting about. But they all work together to broadcast Liga MX games on Tuesday and Wednesday. And in addition to that, too, they had a whole bunch of fundraisers going, discussion shows, and all focused on trying to raise money for the American Red Cross in order to help all these people that have been impacted by these natural disasters. For Liga MX, or MX, Kartik, it was incredible because I'm really kind of regretful, but I didn't get to see any of these matches just because it was a really busy week for me in the evening times. But I will say that for Liga MX, some of these games they were broadcast on 10 networks at the same time. Yeah. So not only, I mean, it's kind of unintended consequences, but I think Liga MX, I'm sure, got a big boost from this one in terms of viewership and also in terms of just people kind of finding and watching the games.
And I also have to say that there was extensive on ESPN News. I'm not sure about on FS2 or on Univision or BN. I think BN did show it, actually. There were extensive pregame shows trying to raise money for the American Red Cross, but they had the ability to show all the Champions League highlights, right? Because this was the wonderful thing about all these networks working together. There were no restrictions on highlights. There were no restrictions on who they could show because ultimately you pool the resources of all these networks and you have rights to everything other than the Premier League, right? But ESPN has the highlights rights of the Premier League. So they were able to present. Now, I didn't watch the lead-in show on Wednesday, I have to admit, although I do have it on tape. Tuesday, I watched the lead-in show, which was 2 hours on ESPN. And they had highlights of all the Champions League games. Mariano Trujillo from Fox, he was on there as well. And it was really, really well done. I mean, it was one of those things which I enjoyed, but The problem is it's a one-off, right? You kind of wish this was happening all the time. Hercules Gomez, just tremendous. I mean, he's become a jack of all trades, whether it's being in the studio, whether it's analyzing Europe, whether it's analyzing MLS, whether it's being in the booth for Liga MX game. He just whichever language, you know, English, Spanish, he's really emerging as a top talent and one that unfortunately, I mean, we talked about this before, unfortunately for Fox, they let get away.
Yeah, and you had Phil Shane commentate his very first Liga MX game. It was so cool to see Univision, ESPN, Fox, and beIN Sports talent.
Thomas Rongen was involved. Great to see.
Ray Hudson. And to see them all together. I mean, they did all this at Univision Studios in Miami, but to see them all together on the same set, working together for a good cause. And through soccer was incredible to see. And I think it's, hats off definitely to Univision for setting this up and then working with all the different broadcasters to get this rolling. It was interesting, though, Kartik, in terms of the emissions. So two emissions, and there might be more than that, but the two biggest emissions I could think of in terms of two companies that were not involved, as far as I could tell, in any way. One is Gold TV, which I'm wondering just in terms of just talent, maybe that they're so small these days that maybe they, you mean, that they're kind of so small and kind of not even involved. And the second thing was Telemundo.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was thinking about Cantor the whole time. I mean, Nico Cantor was on, but his father obviously would have been just tremendous, and he's in Miami. So, yeah, and the NBC networks didn't participate for whatever reason.
Yeah, so I think probably maybe competition in terms of NBC Universo and Telemundo Deportes against Univision.
Yeah, it would have been good to have Andres Cantor also because, as I mentioned on a previous show during Irma, he had to leave Miami and was in Connecticut with Rebecca Lowe in studio for Premier League coverage because obviously they couldn't broadcast out of Miami that weekend. Everything down here was shut down and being hit by a hurricane. So it would have been good to have him because he actually – has a story related to one of the storms, one of the disasters, where what he had to do to keep broadcasting.
Mm-hmm. All right, Kartik, let's move on to the next segment of the show, and that's TV streaming news. And to start with, some major news.
Yeah, Fox has unveiled what they're terming unprecedented coverage plans for the 2018 World Cup in Russia. So I think the big talking point from this is the number of games that are going to be available over the air. That's absolutely tremendous. After ESPN and ABC had de-emphasized that part of the broadcast the last couple World Cups, and it's just a general trend. ESPN Sports, or ABC and ESPN, the Disney networks, have been throwing more and more stuff on cable, including the BCS title game the last few years, as everyone knows. So that's the way they're thinking about distribution, whereas Fox is thinking about distribution in a very different way, it seems. Approximately half the games are going to be over the air, which is just a stunning number. I mean, hats off to Fox. I don't know how it's going to work, how many shows they're going to have to preempt, although let's keep this in mind. And it's been 25 years, really, since 20 or 25 years since the Fox network was built out, 25 years or so, the early 90s. But they still do not have the level of programming and the kind of built-in programming that they can't preempt that the NBCs, ABCs, and CBSs have. Mm-hmm. They're very much the fourth network. So that's probably good in this case, because they can show as much as they can on the network, whereas when you're dealing with ABC or you're dealing with NBC, as we've seen with the Premier League, there are oftentimes that there's programming that you just can't shove out of the way to show things over the air. So I think that this is a positive thing.
The other thing, Kotick, is just in terms of the timing of these games. So with it being in Russia, most of the games are going to kick off each day at 7 a.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Eastern, and 1 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah.
So the timing of those are probably better in terms of just trying to, whatever programming is being shown at those times.
Right. They don't have a Good Morning America or Today type show. That's another thing I'm talking about, the weakness of Fox's programming lineup. They don't have the built-out – Fox has had a built-out primetime lineup for 25 years, but they've never had the daytime strength or the weekend strength that the other three major networks have.
Exactly. Anything else in terms of Fox's news you want to
share? Yeah, I mean, I thought that the Eric Shanks comment about the U.S., if they didn't make the World Cup, I know it was a joke, that would be like $200 million flushed down the toilet. There are so many people that are going to watch this World Cup for the other national teams and Mexico, who's already qualified, and they know Mexico because they're pushing that angle. Yes, it would be a bad deal for them if the U.S. didn't qualify. Would it be $200 million down the drain? Maybe not. Maybe $100 or $150 million down the drain, but not quite $200. So I found that an interesting comment, because they're still very much thinking about the U.S.
Yeah, the feeling I got, Kartik, was that Fox is holding back a little bit because of the U.S. Not having clinched qualification yet for the World Cup. And if the U.S. had already qualified, perhaps maybe Fox was going to be ready to share more or get more excited about everything that's happening for next summer. So I think we're almost in limbo land. Once we know for sure that the U.S. can make it, then perhaps Fox will reveal more information. I was a little bit disappointed in terms of the lack of excitement coming from this news. I mean, it is major news to have 33 games or more going to be shown on over-the-air Fox television. That's incredible. Approximately 350 hours worth of coverage coming from Russia through Fox. That's an incredible number too. Having the set, the main set that they're going to use is a two-story set in the middle of Red Square in Moscow. That'll be interesting. And
that's also interesting because, I mean, we know that the Confederations Cup was an opportunity for them to kind of scout sites, right?
Yeah.
But I found the thing that was stunning is that they had, I thought, a really good vista in St. Petersburg, but now they're going to Red Square, which is going to be so much cooler. But that they did that at the Confederations Cup. It seemed to work. But that they were, in the meantime, still scouting for a better site and got it. That is good work by Fox.
Yeah. I was surprised that they didn't mention the commentators or announcers. They're going to be at the World Cup. Supposedly, they're about 90% of the way making the decisions. Landon Donovan will be one of the stars of Fox's broadcast team. And of course, John Strong, with whom I'm sure we'll be calling the World Cup final. But yeah. It looks like they're going for an All-American approach. Mark Folwell is going to be added alongside Glenn Davis, John Strong, and I'm sure others too. But it's a very American method.
Glenn Davis is going to call games, or Glenn Davis is going to
call games.
Okay,
call games. Yeah. So, so there is like 90% of the way of the decisions have been made about the commentators, but they haven't announced the full lineup yet. So maybe there's a 10% where they're trying to figure out whether to bring in some talent from overseas.
Well, I would hope they would stick with Ian Wright and with Goose Heading. I think both had good Confederations Cups.
Yeah.
Well, as far as Lothar Matthäus, they don't need him, but the other two are fine.
Yeah, Ian Wright will be there for sure. So he's going to be there. Goose Heading, I'm not sure. And Lothar Matthäus, hopefully not. But we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, we'll have to see. And obviously, I think that they have a depth in their ranks as far as potential analysts that we might get into a little bit in the Facebook Live segment, and talent, you know, Rachel Bonetta also, that perhaps we can talk about in terms of what they do during the World Cup. Now, of course, here's a consideration for Fox. Okay, they have Major League Soccer is taking a 2-week break during the World Cup, but the World Cup's a 4-week event, so MLS will play during 2 weeks of the World Cup, the final 2 weeks, and they've got games contractually they'll have to broadcast. It's tough to take a month off, though. I mean, in fairness to MLS.
I know, but who's going to be watching it? I mean, who's going to be interested in going to those
matches? Well, that's true, too, right. Yeah, I mean, in some places there will be. I mean, in Orlando and Seattle, people are more interested in their club teams than in anything else in football. So they'll go to the games. But in New York or L.A., they won't bother, probably. Right. So it depends. I mean, maybe MLS will schedule strategically so that Seattle has a bunch of home games during that period.
Yeah. I guess at that point, too, I mean, Fox would be using or utilizing their kind of the B team or C team in terms of the talent that they have.
They were in that already during the Confederations Cup, now that we think about that. They already had that issue, didn't they?
That's right. Yeah, you had MLS Tony Meola doing some of the games. Exactly. So two more things about the Fox's announcement this week is that one is that Fox's World Cup ratings will include out-of-home broadcasts. So the broadcasts that you see in bars and restaurants and gyms and other public venues, those will be included in the ratings for the first time. So that's a big deal, especially as we've seen with ESPN in previous World Cups, where there were so many people watching these games in bars, and those numbers weren't included in the TV ratings. So that's massive. The other thing is that Fox is trying to get approval from FIFA to insert 6-second ads into World Cup games. And this is something that they have to get approval from FIFA to be allowed to do this. But what they're trying to do is, I think, similar to what they've been doing with MLS games, is have the split screen and have the ad running and the game on the side. Hopefully FIFA says, no, you can't do that. But that's what Fox is trying to do for the World Cup. Now, Kartik, moving on, Fubo TV, the streaming service in the United States, they've made several updates to their streaming service recently, including they've added 49 new Fox markets. So perfect timing with the news about Fox having the World Cup, most of the games on the World Cup next summer. So they've added 49 local over-the-air Fox markets to Fubo, so which includes actually my area here in southern Florida. I'm actually now able to watch my local Fox affiliate live and on demand through Fubo. It brings the coverage of Fox over-the-air to about 59% of all local Fox affiliates available nationwide. Second thing is that they've increased the DVR capacity, so now it's up to 30 hours of programming, and you can save those programs for an unlimited amount of time. In the past, I think it was about 3 days that you could have the recording saved for, but now you can keep it for forever if you want to. They've also added an additional $9.99 a month plan for increased cloud DVR capacity, and that's for up to 500 hours. So if you're the type of person that likes to record everything, they have that as an added feature if you want to go and do that. They're also going to be increasing the price per month for Fubo TV. So right now, if you sign up for month one and month two, it's $19.99 a month. And then in the third month and subsequent months, it's $34.99 a month. They're going to be increasing that $34.99 a month to $39.99 a month for new customers. So if you're a current subscriber, you get grandfathered in with that that rate that you're paying now. So anyway, so if you're contemplating trying Fubo, now's the time to go ahead and try and sign up for a free trial. And then that way, if you do like the service and you do sign up, then you'll be grandfathered in under the $34.99 per month plan. And I believe that change is going to happen this weekend, October 1st. So go ahead and sign up for that free trial.
Fantastic. As previously referenced, this past weekend, we had a major crash of NBC Sports Gold coverage of the Premier League, and I was getting messaged at 10:01 and 10:02 Eastern time about this from some of our listeners, some of you out there listening, and Twitter followers, and I was cautious and decided to wait about 15 minutes before talking about it on Twitter, because I thought, okay, maybe they'll fix it, maybe just these people are having problems. But it seemed to be a massive system-wide issue with login, with the platform crashing, with too much traffic, with errors on the platform. The big thing was Manchester United was playing against Southampton, the first Manchester United game they've had on the platform. Now, we've seen every time there's a big team, Spurs when they played Burnley, Liverpool when they played Burnley also, and now United and Southampton, there was some problem with NBC Sports Gold. This was unprecedented, though. It was crashing on people. People couldn't log in. And they hadn't gotten the word out that they were streaming Goal Rush on NBCSports.com. So finally, the word got put out partly by us, by World Soccer Talk and by myself that they were doing that, NBC. So people went to Goal Rush, but guess what? But there was no audio. And that didn't get fixed till about the 82nd minute. So just an all in all, a disaster for NBC Sports Gold. Now, I think there were people who logged in the second half of NBC Sports Gold, those 10 a.m. Eastern time kickoffs, who got into their games because the traffic had dropped down again and the platform was working properly. But if you tried to log in during the first half between about 10 a.m. Eastern and 10:40 or 10:45 a.m. Eastern, generally you didn't get in. And if you got in, you got an error message. And if you got in and were lucky enough not to get an error message, the system crashed on you within a minute or two.
Yeah, it was, for lack of a better word, it was a shit show. And it's one of those things. Actually, most of those NBC Sports Gold games got moved to NBCSports.com and available for free through there, but just because people weren't able to watch them through NBC Sports Gold. One of my sources revealed to me that the reason for the issue was really was NBC Sports had outsourced, the actual authentication. So when you log in as an NBC Sports Gold customer and you pay to subscribe, that part of the puzzle NBC Sports had outsourced to a different company, and that was the issue that was causing everything to crash. Was the number of people, which they should have expected this, but the number of people, especially Manchester United fans, trying to log in, and they were just having issues once they logged in, just having that. Having it not available and error messages and all sorts of different things. So NBC Sports did make a comment, and we posted that on the WorldSoccerTalk.com website this week, that they're looking into it and they're working on it. And this particular weekend coming up on Saturday, there's four games on NBC Sports Gold. None of them feature massive Premier League teams, no offense. But hopefully behind the scenes, that'll give some more time to figure out the issue and either bring in that technology in-house rather than outsourcing it, or work with a partner more closely to actually fix this issue so it doesn't happen again. Because at the end of the day, Kartik, it could end up being that if this keeps on happening and they keep on issuing refunds or credits, that by the end of the season that this service would have been free anyway with all the credits we'd be receiving. So hopefully they'll get the act together, because my fear, Kartik, is really is that this is a big warning sign for Turner Sports for next season, where 50% or more of the Champions League games and all of the Europa League games, except for one, the final, is going to be streamed online to soccer fans nationwide. So if you do have a Manchester United against Barcelona game, you mean, will they be able to handle that type of traffic and that type of sign-ups, which a lot of it is last minute? That's my concern. So hopefully Turner Sports is watching this closely and getting their technology act together to make sure that this doesn't happen for them. Now, Kartik, World Soccer Talk. So this is something I've been working on for, I think I mentioned this on the podcast a few times before in the past year, but I've been working on a book, e-book, which is going to be a guide to how to watch soccer legally on TV and online in the United States. And I've been working on this for the past year. Every time I'm so close to getting it ready to publish, something changes. Like NBC Sports Gold is launched with a Premier League pass, or the championship changes hands from beIN Sports to ESPN3, or iFollow is launched from the Football League, etc., etc. So what I've done is actually I've decided to put the book on hold and instead go ahead and release different kind of one-pagers, kind of summaries of each of the major leagues and major streaming services, and then make those available to listeners and readers, so you can go ahead and download those for free. So I have four so far created. One's for La Liga, one's for the Premier League, I got one for Sling World Sports, and then also one for FUBU Premier. And each of these goes into a lot of detail about what the services include and don't include, and what the prices are. It's a lot of research actually involved. So go ahead and if you're interested, go to worldsoccertalk.com, and on the homepage there'll be an article that talks about the free downloads, and go ahead and download those, and then you'll get those through email.
Fantastic. Yeah, and that's useful for all our listeners, so I would take advantage of that if I were you. The Guardian this past week reported Eric Winalda has an interest in running for USSF president. This is actually something I've known about for a long time, so I wasn't as stunned as everybody else was. But this is a person in Winalda. If you watch him on Fox Sports, you know he has very different opinions about the structure of U.S. soccer and the success of Major League Soccer versus and coached in the NASL, coached in the second division, versus the company men, as I've called them. Maybe that's too nasty a term. Maybe that's a over-the-top term. But there's a clear contrast between Ronaldo's point of view as a co-commentator and former U.S. men's national team player and someone who's coached in the system versus the other former U.S. men's national team players who are on television and have coached in the U.S. system. So it would be a stern challenge for Sunil Gulati if he's able to run for president. Now, there are other challengers out there, Paul LaPointe, among others, who's the commissioner of the UPSL in the Northeast region. There is a situation where Sunil Gulati was unopposed the first several times he was elected president, the first three times he was elected president of U.S. soccer. This fourth time, it looks like the combination of the issues around the hiring and sacking of Jurgen Klinsmann, the performance of the men's national team, the antitrust lawsuit that's now been filed by NASL against U.S. soccer, but the unhappiness of people in kind of the NASL circuit, if you will call it that, the pro-rel people, and then also to a large extent the botched situation with the women's CBA, which finally got resolved. But all of these issues have popped up to the surface, and the FIFA scandal, a big chunk of the FIFA scandal taking place on U.S. soil, to make Gulati more vulnerable than he's been in the past. Eric Winalda, I would encourage people to read that Guardian article. Just do a Google search for it. It ran about last Friday or last Thursday, talking about his vision for U.S. soccer if he were to make this race. And it certainly would be very interesting if he ran. There's most of the people I talk to probably would support him. But again, I'm in one of kind of, you know, one of the factions, if you will, but he's certainly got an authoritative voice and a credibility that it would be tough to match in the race.
Yeah, I like the idea. I think it's somebody who will definitely shake things up, or at least try to. And I'm really excited about this, Kartik. I think hopefully he decides to run, and we'll have to wait and see in terms of the process, you know, in terms of how democratic that process is. And if he has
I think there are a lot of powers that be that will absolutely go to Nguyen to try and stop him.
Exactly.
Be honest about it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not threatened by some of no offense to Paul Lapointe, who I like a great deal, and some of the other people who've talked about running, but I think there's a real fear of Winalda, as we even see when he commentates, right? I mean, there's just this want to shut him up at times, from the powers that be in the game in this sport, in this country. So
I think
I don't know how democratic the process will be if he runs, honestly. I have to say that at the outset.
I think if he does decide to run, I think it really, a lot of it depends on the listeners, on the soccer fans in the United States to stand up and really get behind him and really focus in on this in terms of supporting him and making sure that the whole process of the actual USSF presidency process is as democratic as possible, and to make sure that he doesn't get shut out, because I could see a lot of opposition forces trying to stop him, or just trying to badmouth him, or just trying to put him down and try to limit his chances of winning. So the election, Kartik, is that in February?
It's in February in Orlando.
Okay. All right. So I'm sure we'll be keeping listeners and readers too, also on worldsoccertalk.com, updated as we get closer to that election, and making sure that if he does decide to run, or whoever decides to run, that we get the information out there to make change. All right, so the last piece of news, Kartik, this is a big one. This one came in this morning on Thursday, and that is that the Premier League is now proposing a new way to divide up the revenue from international TV rights. Under the current deal, all 20 clubs split the international TV revenue. So, for example, last season, each club received $39 million in revenue from international TV rights. But with the amount of money increasing into the multi-billions internationally, the top six Premier League clubs want 35% of the money to be split based on merit. So, for example, the top six would get a lot more money than the clubs that end up in 7th through 20th position. So the clubs who want it to be based on the merit system are, no surprise, Manchester United, Manchester City, Chelsea, Liverpool, Arsenal, and Spurs. And according to David Kahn in The Guardian, he says that 11 of the other 14 clubs are against the idea. And I'm actually surprised that there's three clubs out there in that kind of other 14 that are actually perhaps for it. But maybe they think they're a part of the big six.
Everton might be one of them.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Is clubs that probably think that they're kind of a top six club, but are not. And right. Everton probably is one of those ones, Kartik, you're right. So the Premier League clubs have scheduled a meeting for next Wednesday to decide on how that money from the international TV rights will be shared in future seasons. This could have major changes, Kartik.
It would be. Look, I think what we're finding with English football, I mean, there are a lot of pro-rel advocates in this country, and I'm a pro-rel person as well, but who completely misinterpret what's gone on in England and think that it's some sort of meritorious system and that it's equitable. This would be yet another step, if this were passed, away from the kind of equitable promise that the Premier League had when it split off in 92 and 93. And David Kahn, I think he's he comes from one perspective, but a lot of the things he's written through the years that I used to poo-poo have actually come to pass, unfortunately. And that's why I get into these fights with pro-rel advocates all the time on Twitter, saying, hey, I want pro-rel. I completely agree, but I think you have to have some degree of control and revenue splitting, whether it's pre-92 England or it's the way MLS splits revenue, and caps expenses. If you don't have that, then there are certain teams that are going to dominate, and eventually they're going to dominate in the boardroom as well. And it's going to be like Europe, where just a few teams are winning titles in every league every year. This would be I think, a terrible thing if this happened. But yeah. I'm not holding out much hope because it seems like there have been progressive steps by the Premier League toward favoring that Sky 6, as the Swiss mm-hmm. Ramble termed them several years ago, which was based on television. Everything is going in that direction.
Yeah, plus, I mean, you look at Leicester. I mean, Leicester perhaps couldn't happen if this change does happen where Leicester gets...
It wouldn't happen.
Right. A lot less of the money, and the top six get even more money, and it kind of pushes out the Leicesters and reduces the chances of ever kind of winning the league.
I think so much of the success of those top teams, the ability of a Manchester City or a Chelsea to compete with Barcelona and Real Madrid and Bayern, because let's be honest, who are they to really be able to compete with those clubs in terms of the overall European landscape, is because the Premier League is so strong from top to bottom, and there is an inability to share revenue, which has elevated the league to such a point where there are people who want to play in that league, even if they feel like, well, I may not win a European Cup if I go to Manchester City. Now, if you're beginning to pull that off, maybe short term, you've got more money to spend and you're able to compete with Real Madrid and Barcelona. But long term, it turns the Premier League into La Liga, it turns the Premier League into the Bundesliga, into Liga without the competition, right? Mm-hmm. Or even Serie A. I mean, I think Serie A now might be a year we're seeing a comeback to more balance in that league. But there hasn't been much balance in that league recently either. So the way TV revenue has been split, I stress this over and over again. I'm sorry I'm taking a lot of time on this point, Chris, but the way TV revenue has been split is the only reason why the Premier League is more competitive than those other leagues in Europe. And if you keep going in this direction, you end up with a league where there are huge gaps. We already saw a 15-point gap between 7th and 8th last season in the league, which to me was pretty ominous. Now, maybe this year it'll be more competitive, but I'm concerned about the league, which is why I want reform in U.S. soccer, but I don't want us to automatically copy the English model. Because there are things like this that I think this will eventually happen, Chris. I'm not holding out much hope that it'll be stopped, whether it happens next Wednesday or it happens 2 years from now. And I think the league is just getting further and further away from the majority of fans in that country mm-hmm. And their ability of their clubs to really compete.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, I mean, from the Sky 6, I can understand their perspective. They're saying that from the international TV rights side of things, I mean, USA is a big part of that, is that the majority of viewers tuning in and getting excited about the Premier League are fans of the Sky 6. Right. But at the same time, to make the league more competitive and keep it as competitive as it is, except for Crystal Palace, sorry Palace fans. I mean, you really kind of have to try to share that wealth as much as possible so that it is competitive week in, week out, as opposed to other leagues, La Liga as one example, where, it really is just, it's probably just two teams, but sometimes usually three teams out of 20 that are going to go for the title. At least with the Premier League, you could say, six or seven of those teams have a good chance of actually winning it. All right, Kartik, let's move on, though, to TV ratings for this past weekend. And a big number out of MLS. We talked about this last episode. We're not surprised. 1.35 million for Sporting KC, LA Galaxy, and Atlanta Montreal on Fox this past Sunday with the doubleheaders with the NFL. And the way that this worked was that some cities that get Fox got the Sporting KC LA Galaxy game, and then some cities got the Atlanta Montreal game, depending on where you are in the country and what NFL games were going on. So if you were to split it down the middle, which we don't know what those numbers are yet, but roughly about 665,000 viewers per game. So definitely some good numbers there, Kartik.
It was just a crapshoot. I mean, I don't follow the NFL, so I had no idea how what markets were getting what. And unfortunately, my market got the Sporting KC LA Galaxy game. I was all psyched to watch Atlanta. I'm generally getting psyched to watch a lot of Atlanta recently, and unfortunately wasn't able to on my local channel here.
Yeah, I should have told you. Actually, Fox Sports Go had both of them. So no matter where you lived in the country, you could still see both of the games or either of the games. So you could have, even if your local Fox affiliate wasn't showing it, you could still go through Fox.
Yeah, I wish I'd watched that. I mean, Atlanta is, a lot of people like to knock Major League Soccer. I do as well, obviously, but a lot on this show. But Atlanta, if you watch Atlanta United, you might think MLS is one of the top leagues in the world. I mean, they are that fun to watch, quite frankly, right now.
Absolutely. And then some of the other numbers we got from this past weekend, 811,000 people tuned in to watch that Leicester-Liverpool game on NBC and Universo. We had 355,000 for Manchester City against Crystal Palace on NBCSN and Universo. I won't go through all of them, but we'll have all of them at worldsoccertalk.com. Girona against Barcelona was 355,000 on beIN Sports and beIN Sports in Espanyol. And 454,000 for Brighton against Newcastle on NBCSN and Telemundo. That's a big number for a Brighton-Newcastle game. I think about 155,000 was from Telemundo on that one alone. And then Alaves against Real Madrid, 286,000 on beIN Sports and beIN Sports in Espanyol. Also, Celtic US Open Cup final, 274,000. A decent number there for ESPN2.
Yeah, they had the Atlanta Galaxy game on before, which had 212,000. Now, consider this. There were 212,000 people to watch an Atlanta-LA Galaxy game that started at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2 on a Wednesday night, and there were only 110,000, or if you combine the Deportes number, 133,000 for Portland-Orlando, 8 p.m. Eastern time, prime time on a Sunday night on FS1. Mm-hmm. I think the point has to be made that Major League Soccer, I know it hurts attendance, and that these Wednesday games that we've had the last 2 weeks have actually hurt Atlanta United's average, because they've only had 40,000 had 40,000 at those games, whereas they're getting 60,000 or 70,000 on the weekend. MLS has got to. We've talked about this over and over again. I see more and more data points that point to me that they just got to pick a night a week and show a national game that week, and have the occasional Sunday games still, but shift Sunday to Thursday or shift Sunday to Wednesday.
Yeah, I still don't think that's the problem, though, Kartik. I don't think that's going to fix things. Yes, it could help, but it's not the reason that people are not watching.
Oh, no. I there's a lot more to it, but I think it will improve things. I think there's I'm more inclined to watch an MLS game. I mean, I'll tell you, I bought MLS Live just so I could watch midweek games like I did last night. But I also had the Liga MX games on from the charity event on my television. But I just seem more inclined to watch Major League Soccer during the week because I'm not burnt out from watching Premier League or Bundesliga or La Liga.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, definitely the weekends, the burnout syndrome happens to the best of us too, especially after watching, kind of getting up at 7:30 in the morning or 7 in the morning and going all the way through till, you mean, early afternoon or mid-afternoon, and then you've still got several more hours to go of games. That's a good point there, Kartik. A couple more numbers just from the ratings. NYCFC against Houston. This was on Unimas and Univision Deportes Network. 134,000 on that one for a really small view number for a game that was played in Connecticut. But supposedly the game itself was actually pretty exciting.
Yeah, I watched this game, a little bit of it, and I enjoyed it. I checked it out, I will admit, just for the venue. Mm-hmm. They're playing in Hartford.
Right.
It's unfortunate that this is where NYCFC is. We always felt like they would be with the Yankees situation. So getting a stadium is important. In the meantime, Patrick Vieira is doing the best job he can. They have the second best record in the league, and without really kind of a home stadium. So you got to give them a lot of credit.
And then one of the highlights then, too, from the Bundesliga, there was a midweek game last week, and that was Schalke against Bayern Munich. That was on FS1 and Fox Deportes on the Tuesday, I believe. That one had 107,000 viewers, which, again, for the Bundesliga, anything over 100,000 is a big gain.
And that was during the day. So that was during the day on a weekday. Weston McKinney, American international, made his first Bundesliga start in that game for Schalke.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on to listener mailbag. The first one is from Wally Neck. Sorry, I've got your name pronounced wrong.
Name,
but
must be John Walianek, the former Red Bull player.
Hey, you never know. So this was on Twitter. He says that in response to your last episode, the past couple of cycles of U.S. youth players has been weak, to be generous. To be a feeder league, you need product to export. The fact that we missed major youth tournaments and the Olympics recently show the lack of talent that was coming out of America, not just MLS. Also missing out limits exposure to scouts. Look at the overall pool of 23 to 29-year-old Americans. How many would you choose over current 23 to 29-year-olds around the world? It is true that MLS does not make developing Americans a priority, nor should they. Responsibility is to the investors. Make as much money as possible for the crafts, etc. Keeping players here increases roster stability and reduces risk of replacing solid players with a flop. As you said, American sports owners are quite risk adverse. MLS develops talent to keep costs lower. Kartik, what do you say to that?
I agree with him, particularly about the point about scouting. So we saw after the 2007 Youth World Cup or Under 20 World Cup, where the U.S. made a big run, that Jozy Altidore went to Villarreal. Danny Sotelo went to a club in Italy. I'm blanking out on the club now. Brescia, I think it was. Sal Sizzo got signed by Hanover. None of them really made it at those clubs, but it wasn't their playing Major League Soccer or at their colleges that got them those looks. It was the Under 20 World Cup. Now, fast forward 10 years, Eric Palmer Brown is having a hard time getting playing time in Major League Soccer. But he was so good at the Under 20 World Cup, in the estimation of some scouts this summer, that he got signed by Manchester City. He signed a pre-contract with Manchester City. Yeah, absolutely. If you're not in those tournaments, it limits the ability of European clubs to scout you and pick you up. I think in a lot of cases, they're more interested in how you do in those tournaments. Actually, I have to say the same thing for Miasca. Miasca, I think, got signed by Chelsea more off of the play in the U-20 World Cup in 2015 than his play in MLS, although he, to me, was one of the best defenders in MLS, a league that has that is kind of deficient defensively. Mm-hmm. But I think he probably got that contract more out of U.S. youth national team performances than out of the World Cup and out of MLS, and he got to Chelsea. And now Palmer Brown is signing with Man City. So they're big clubs who will take chances on Americans if they see them in those youth competitions. And when you don't qualify for those youth competitions, that pipeline's cut off. I think Walniak has hit it spot on. And it's, to be honest with you, it is not something I've thought about until he wrote this comment to us. And I thought about it the last few days. I was like, yeah, you know, he's right. History bears it out.
Next comment is from letter is from Random Black Rain on Twitter, and he says he went ahead and did some computations, and he said that since MLS the 2017 season has started, there have been 782 soccer games on national television. 80 of them have been on MLS. There were 305 million TV viewers of soccer in aggregate since the start of the MLS 2017 season. Only 20.5 million chose to watch MLS, which equals 6.7%. So definitely some numbers to kind of take into consideration in terms of, I mean, soccer is a big thing in the United States, but MLS is just a small portion of that. And sometimes I think MLS fans or clubs or owners kind of think that they are much bigger than that 6.7%. Next up is SoccerDave253 on Twitter, and he says, "Kartik, how do you guys? What do you guys think of Lifetime and how they're doing with the NWSL broadcast?"
I think they're doing really well. I watched them again this week, Portland and Orlando on Saturday, and they do a really good job of presenting the league and presenting the clubs and highlighting players, which I like, and the production level is off the charts. I do think the one thing I would critique is that they're very kind of self-contained in how they analyze the league, which is the way MLS was broadcast for years, right? Mm-hmm. Because there are some tremendous things going on in European club football that seem to not be talked about on their broadcasts and competition from European clubs for some of these players. But I think that's just a personal pet peeve. I think they're doing a fantastic job, and it's a great broadcast, great media partner for the league.
And the TV numbers are still decent. Last weekend was Orlando Pride against Portland Thorns, and that was 82,000 on Lifetime. So those numbers are still pretty close to the 100,000 mark on a routine basis. Last but not least, Stephen Kirkpatrick on Twitter said the quality of the Forest Green Rovers against Swindon broadcast on ESPN3 last week was excellent. Interesting to see a fourth division English broadcast be so much better than our second division broadcast in the United States.
I think there's a lot USL productions and those who broadcast NASL can probably learn from the way the championship, the football league broadcasts are done. It's going to be interesting to see as these matches are available on ESPN3. We've seen a smattering of League One and League Two games the last few weeks. If one or two of those clubs gains interest. Now, hardcore fans have subscribed to iFollow. I know some Pompey fans who've done that, for example. But if there is one or two League One or League Two clubs that catches the fancy of American fans and develops a following out of it.
Yeah, and Forest Green Rovers could be one of those clubs. If you do want to learn more about Forest Green Rovers, The Guardian had a great piece.
I think a lot of people will like, actually.
Yeah.
If they find out more about them.
Yeah,
like what they stand for.
Yeah, and in the next few weeks, actually, there's going to be a few more games too from League One and League Two on ESPN3 and Sling Orange, and we've got the schedule at worldsoccertalk.com under the Championship TV schedule page. We've got I think Coventry's playing, and some other League One and League Two clubs are going to be shown. So pretty cool. And then, if you do guys have any questions or feedback, or you want to send us. Any comments in terms of a question about streaming or watching soccer on television, we're here to answer those questions for you. You can reach us through email, which is web@worldsoccertalk.com, through Twitter @WSoccerTalk, apologies, and then through Facebook at facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. All right, Kartik, this is our feature topic of the week, and we want to talk about the verdict so far on Facebook Live soccer streams. So as of the recording of this podcast, Facebook Live has dived into soccer broadcasts. They've done some Liga MX games with the English broadcasts of those, and now they've done the UEFA Champions League games. So we've seen Manchester City against Feyenoord, we've got Manchester City against Shakhtar Donetsk, PSG against Celtic, PSG against Bayern Munich this week. What's been your overall thoughts about the quality of the streams and kind of pluses and minuses? And do you think this is something that could be part of the future of soccer broadcasting?
Yeah, a couple points here. One, it's not, and maybe it's because I'm Facebook illiterate. I for years have had trouble finding things on Facebook, which is why I like Twitter so much better, and I have six times as many Twitter followers as I do Facebook followers, and have complained to people who are very Facebook driven, like my wife, about Facebook. Finding the games has been difficult. Once I find them, it's great. But you do a search for Manchester City versus Shakhtar the other day, and I'm getting somebody's thread on it, somebody's commentary, and then I put in Facebook Live, somebody doing a Facebook Live. I think it was Stuart Brennan, actually, from the Manchester Evening News, live from the game before the game. I'm like, oh, no, I want the Fox broadcast. Mm-hmm. Finally get it. This happened the previous time, too, the Feyenoord game, but I was in the middle of hurricane recovery, so I wasn't as peeved about it at the time. I mean, I was just going to watch a little bit of that game. So the broadcast itself, Rachel Panetta did a good job as host. She didn't. It wasn't like the last broadcast where she was trying to call the game. I thought Brian Dunseth was incredibly good in terms of his ability to analyze Manchester City. Now, again, if you're a Shakhtar fan, I'm sorry. I guess it's just not many people know much about Shakhtar, but in this country, even though I've seen them play in person twice in this country in the last few years here in Florida, but when they've come here during their winter break in the Ukraine. But Dunseth was really spot on in a lot of his analysis of Manchester City while he was also calling the game. So I thought he was good. Malkiat and him had good chemistry, although Malkiat didn't necessarily make the kind of analytical points that Dunseth was making. But I quite enjoyed it. I thought Dunning was really good in his element, knows the club, knows the players in the club, so was able to provide a real high level of analysis. The question is for guys like Dunseth and Malkiat is if you end up with the random like Apoel versus Porto game, how well they'll do. It's different when you have a City, you have a PSG playing because they know those clubs. But I thought it was quite good. I like the quality of the stream. I didn't have any of the kind of problems with this stream that I had had with ESPN3 the previous week with League Cup midweek. And I thought it was a very good broadcast, very clean broadcast, both the PSG Bayern game and the Man City Shakhtar game. My only complaint again is that Facebook is cluttered, and finding this stuff on Facebook takes some time. If you're not that determined to watch the match, and you're as Facebook illiterate as I am, you might not find it.
Yeah, Kartik, it's amazing in terms of, and again, before the show, we don't talk about these opinions, so we kind of like share them live and cold. So I don't know what you're going to say, and you don't know what I'm going to say. I completely agree in terms of how bad Facebook is in terms of search. And the same thing happened to me, too, is that I knew where the actual games were. But there were so many people on social media, on Twitter and other places that were completely lost. And the funny thing, it's funny but sad, is that on Facebook, on one of the really active soccer hardcore groups there, where you got fans every day talking about all the games, the massive soccer fans. And they had posted something on there too, saying like, where is the Man City, the PSG Bayern game? I can't find it. And somebody posted and replied to say, yeah, I think it's on ESPN. And someone replied and said, no, I think it's on Fox Supporters. Someone else replied, I think it's on Facebook. And they're on Facebook having this conversation in real time. And I think ultimately, finally, one of them posted and said, hey, here's a link to it. And the link was to an illegal stream. It wasn't to the actual Facebook live stream, the legal stream. And that's the biggest issue. And I think it's one of those things that I think as long as Facebook search stays the same, which has stayed the same for years, anyone that's been using Facebook knows that this is going to be a fad, that Facebook Live and soccer games are going to be a fad unless Facebook fixes that, because unless they can...
I've had trouble. We haven't talked about this topic before, but I've had trouble finding the Liga MX games. I try and watch them ever so often, the Facebook Live games, and you'll do a search and you'll end up with something completely different.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing, though, too. I think there were so many people, too, that were surprised. Fox didn't do a great job, I don't think, in terms of... I mean, yes, they said, okay, the game's on Facebook Live, but what does that mean to the average person on the street? I mean, do they know where to find those games? I mean, was there kind of a step-by-step details on television or on the Fox Sports website that said, hey, here's actually how to find it? Because for you and I, Kartik, for me, I knew where they were to start off with, so it made it easier, but that's an issue. In terms of the commentary and the kind of the hosting, and I think they're doing a much better job. I think, like you said, too, Rachel Bonetta, Mario Melchiot, and Brian Dunseth have great chemistry together. And I think in many ways that the trio there are better than when Stuart Holden was in there. Stuart Holden was okay, but these three seem to work better together. I would say, though, to Kartik, that I would prefer, if at all possible, if they just focused on the pre-match, halftime, and post-match, and then for the actual commentary, just use the world feed, and you had the expert commentators kind of providing a commentary. To me, at least, from my perspective, that would have been much better. Now, in terms of the numbers, so I looked at the numbers, and I wanted to write them down and see kind of how many people were actually watching these games. So for the Manchester City against Shakhtar game, which is on Tuesday on Facebook Live, the pre-game coverage, that topped about 3,100 viewers. And then I came back in at, I think, the beginning of halftime, and that was up to about 5,500 viewers. So not a lot of people watching the game, probably not a lot of Shakhtar fans, to be honest, but still, the level of excitement and anticipation for the PSG Bayern Munich game, of course, was much higher, especially with the Neymar involved. And pre-match for this one, it topped 10,000 viewers. So more than double than what the Man City Shakhtar game got, even at its peak. And at the beginning of halftime for PSG Bayern Munich, it was 45,000 viewers. And then at halftime, I mean, it looked like it was going to be PSG going all the way, which it ended up being that way too. But at the beginning of the second half, it dropped it back down to about 31,000 viewers.
Okay, so you're Turner Sports, and you're seeing 45,000 people are watching a stream on Facebook that Fox is putting out there. Now, do you get encouraged and think we can get all these people to buy our pay-per-view product? Or are you thinking, oh my goodness, we're cutting off our own legs because this is a free stream Fox is offering via a third-party platform, and they got 45,000 viewers? Mm-hmm. Maybe we should think twice about the paywall. How do you think Turner views those numbers? Because that, I have to tell you, that number to me is enormous, considering it's Facebook Live, the 45,000. Yep. That's madness. I thought it would be 5 or 10,000.
And
honestly,
and that's free. I mean, so and also, if that game was on television, which that to me would have been the biggest game yesterday to show, that might have got, say, 250,000 viewers. I mean, the challenge that Fox has is there's so many good games on these match days that, okay, how do you distribute all these? Because, I mean, you'd have to have so many channels to show this on television. You have to put some of these online. This was a big one. This was a kind of a, on purpose, they went ahead and put this one on Facebook Live, hoping to get a big number. And of course, it's an investment. They're looking at this saying, okay, well, let's put it on Facebook Live. We know it's going to be fewer than the TV side, but maybe 6 months from now, these numbers are now, I mean, 245,000 people are actually viewing it. I don't think so. I don't think it's going to get that high. But yeah, Turner's got to be thinking in terms of also, I mean, the illegal streaming part of it too, where people are just, okay, they can't find the game. They don't know it's on Facebook Live. They're on Facebook. They can't find it. So they just go to an illegal stream again. That's the challenge. And of course, Turner will show some of these games on television. But still, I think Turner's probably, to me, that number's low, Kartik, 45,000 viewers. To you, it's big. But to me, it's low in terms of a game of this caliber available for free on Facebook, especially given Facebook size.
Not knowing where it is, I think, factors into it. I mean, that's still a pretty big number. I mean, this is a daytime game, and there were other games on at the same time in the same competition that were on television. Chelsea was playing, Man United was playing, and Barcelona, right.
Yeah.
And those games were all on television.
And Celtic. And yeah, there's a lot of big games on. So I guess it depends which way you look at it. At this point, I think Turner's probably not going to make a U-turn in terms of their strategy, in terms of offering most of the games online. And I guess at the end of the day, Kartik, it's probably more down to revenue, more down to money, in terms of figuring out how much revenue they can possibly generate by offering a streaming product, whether it's going to be a standalone UEFA Champions League product or if it's going to be a Turner Sports product that has Champions League and Europa League and, you mean, I don't know, NBA basketball or something together. At the end of the day, I think it's going to be more figured on the amount of money they can generate rather than the actual viewer numbers. And so far, as we've seen with NBC Sports Gold, there's been a lot of backlash. I mean, a lot of people saying, like, I'm not willing to pay. Screw it.
Right.
You mean, enough's enough. I already pay so much money with my DirecTV bill. I'm not going to be paying an extra $50 for a service I was getting for free.
I mean, Fox has made these games so available. This is the danger for Turner. People complain about Fox's coverage, and rightfully so, although, again, we earlier in this show, we've given them a lot of praise for making the changes in the studio that they made, at least for this week, which really improved the broadcast. But you get so many games on television on Fox. You get the game on the Fox Sports Regional Net. You get the FS1, FS2. If there's a game kicking off in Russia or Ukraine early, you get that game too, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Or Cyprus.
Yeah,
it's an expectation now, and I have a feeling even though it's a different network, it might go the same direction as NBC Sports Gold, where people are like, hey, you know, they gave this to us for free. It's not really free, but you feel like it's free for years. I'm not paying for it.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, Kartik. And especially with Turner Sports, we have no idea in terms of, I mean, hopefully they'll do a great job, but we have no idea in terms of their technology, how strong that'll be. We don't have no idea in terms of the talent who they're going to be hiring to actually broadcast and bring these games to you.
The thing with NBC Sports Gold is if they just made the thing available on television, like they do with the like they used to do with NBC Live Extra, and like they do with NBCSports.com, where you can do it on your computer, it might be much more accessible, and people may not be complaining as much. The fact that you're having to use this dedicated app, you know, not even your web browser, is I think is a big part of the problem, and then authentication becomes an issue with that, and all of this stuff.
Yeah.
So hopefully Turner sees that, and maybe even if they don't offer spillover channels on the television, if you subscribe, they make it possible for you to just do it in a web browser from any mobile device or your desktop computer, which will encourage people who do it at work, who are at work during these Champions League games, to subscribe now. And NCAA March Madness, they have all of these things available, Turner. So hopefully they'll do the same thing with the Champions League. But they could go down the NBC Sports Gold route, where I think not only is it a pay service, but it's a rather inaccessible pay service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, it's one of the two biggest things in terms of streaming, whether it's any sports. I mean, we're talking about soccer here. Really, it comes down to quality of the stream, and then reliability, making sure that, I mean, every time I tune in to watch whatever game it is, it's going to be there. I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to worry about it crashing or going down or buffering or any of that. And at the end of the day, I don't think people are that concerned about the money part of it. I mean, the money, you mean, if you don't have much money and you're a teenager, yes. But for the most part, I think people would be willing to pay for a product that is reliable and has great quality. And that's where we're at right now, is we're not getting that. We've had issues with NBC Sports Gold. Like you mentioned, you had issues with ESPN3. Fubo had a couple of issues this week, too, in terms of their Champions League coverage. And it happens. And that's where the technology is at. It's not perfect yet, and it's getting there, but I think that's, at the end of the day, that's what people are looking at more so, is the reliability and quality of the streams. Kartik, let's move on and close. It's been a long show, but a good show. And so where can Kartik, where can listeners find you on the internet?
KKFLA on Twitter, or find me on Facebook or Google+ with my name. WorldSoccerTalk.com is the website, or theFloridaSqueeze.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audio Boom, and WorldSoccerTalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. And Kartik, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.